Good afternoon, Juno. It's 2:59 p.m. It's time for a Juno Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host for today. And on the show, we are going to get a preview of the upcoming local film premiere of Space Trucker Bruce with filmmaker Anton Daron. We'll get an update on the activities at Nugget Mall with the new marketing director, Dale Smith. Gina White will be here to give us an overview of the March of Dimes. We'll talk with Theater in the Rough's Aaron Elmore about their new production, and we'll get an update on the activities at Eagle Crest, their spring break schedule, and the Alaska Terrain Park services. All these guests, Bird Note, Writer's Almanac, music, weather, and more. Stay with us. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, several people lined up to testify Tuesday before a state house committee on the problems that contribute to high rates of violence against Alaska Native people. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
A few months ago, the Indian Law and Order Commission issued a report singling out Alaska. Commission Chairman Troy Ide told Alaskan legislators the state's rates of domestic violence and sexual assault are 10 and 12 times the national average. Ide says the commission traced the problem to the state's ineffective and wasteful centralized system and its tense relationship with tribes.
It's in every Alaskan's interest to save that kind of money and to not have an environment where you spend more money litigating against your natives than all the other states in the United States combined.
People testified law and order for Alaska Natives is starved for resources. Tribal judges are unpaid or receive only part-time pay. Village public safety officers act as firemen, police, and search and rescue officers in rural Alaska. VPSO James Holscher of Hooper Bay in western Alaska says he's been provided with a car, office, and housing. Three essentials, he says, many VPSOs are not provided.
If you sat down and you listened to the majority of VPSOs, I think most of us would be surprised to hear what they are not offered or what is not provided to them.
The Alaska House Community and Regional Affairs Committee had invited the state attorney general to attend the hearing, but he had a scheduling conflict. The committee plans to extend another invitation to him to hear his side of the story. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
A tribal employee in Oklahoma has pleaded guilty to federal embezzlement charges. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the case involves thousands of dollars in fuel purchases.
The U.S. Attorney for Western Oklahoma accused Kyle J. Grip of using his position as a manager with the Kickapoo Tribe's property and supply unit to embezzle more than $20,000. Federal prosecutors say Gibb admitted that from January of 2011 through the end of 2012, he used a Kickapoo Tribe credit card to buy more than $22,000 in gasoline for his personal vehicles. He faces as much as 5 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release, and a fine of $250,000. In a plea agreement, Gibb agreed to pay restitution to the Kickapoo Tribe in the amount of nearly $22,500. Gibb worked for the tribe from July of 2008 through January of 2013. He pleaded guilty in the case last week, and his sentencing is set for June. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
Tribal leaders from across the country are gathered in Washington, D.C. for a legislative summit. Topics this week include advocacy training, the Affordable Care Act, and federal tax issues in Indian Country. Leaders are also meeting with members of Congress and federal officials. The Porch Band of Creek Indians and the University of South Alabama have announced the establishment of a Native American Studies program. It will include highlighting the history and culture of the tribe and others in the Southeast U.S. The Porch Creek Indians are descendants of the Creek Nation of Alabama and Georgia. They were not removed from tribal lands and have lived for nearly 200 years in and around their reservation in Alabama. The tribe is the only federally recognized one in the state. In March 2013, President Obama signed the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act. Tribal leaders and advocates celebrated its passage as an effort to protect Native women. Provisions permit tribal authority to investigate, prosecute, and convict non-Indian offenders who commit sexual assault and domestic violence. Three tribes recently began exercising this authority through a pilot project. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to A Juneau Afternoon. It's 3.05 p.m., Wednesday, March 12th. I'm Ken Fix, your host. And before I talk with Anton Daron, who is my first guest, about his upcoming film, Space Trucker Bruce, we're going to hear the theme song for the movie, which is called Supply Lines and Deadlines. So I'm going to play that first, and then we'll be back with Anton. So hang on just a moment. Here we go. Supply Lines and Deadlines, which is the theme song for Space Trucker Bruce. And my guest right now is Anton Daron. Nice to meet you. I've seen the trailer on YouTube, so let's hear it. Tell us all about your production.
All right. Well, I started out about 6 years ago, and I had moved back to Juneau, and I had some childhood friends that lived here, and they'd been making videos for the local Jump Film Festival. I wanted to make one, and up until that point, I devoted my free time to making robots. I have an engineering degree, and I program. So I wanted to make a sci-fi video, and I came up with the concept of Space Trucker Bruce as a short film, but I felt too constrained by the 10-minute length, so I made a feature instead. And what the film is about is, in the near future, a breakthrough in gravity control allows inexpensive access to space. So the solar system becomes booming with colonies and space stations, and cargo is going this way and that, and truckers haul the cargo between stations. The most precious cargo is hog fat. Bruce is a trucker who works the hog fat lines between Earth and the Titan station. He's content with his life, but he's a little lonely. A month away from the Titan station, he picks up Max, who's an easily bored automation engineer with a broken shuttle. Max is about to go crazy from space boredom when they receive a distress call. And the strange thing about this is Bruce's long-range receiver's broken. So they don't know, how is he picking up?
Yeah, how is he getting the distress call in the first place?
Exactly. Soon they discover there's this huge dark object approaching from behind. And they have to survive a... risk everything to survive a deadly encounter and deliver their hog fat.
Well, that sets up the whole premise for the film then. And I asked you before we got airing here, why hog fat? And I said, well, it could have been pickle brine or just about it. Hog fat's funny, though. That sounds good.
Well, I'm not really sure where I came up with the idea of hog fat. I wanted something comical that they would be carrying. And hog fat popped in there, so... And the solar system does have a use for hog fat. The stations use it. It is, of course, the most valuable substance in the universe. So,
yeah, almost as valuable as bacon. Boy, it's amazing how much bacon has gone up in price. But okay, yes. So hog fat is the commodity being transported.
Yes.
Now you constructed all the sets and did a lot of this stuff yourself. Now, I've watched the video on YouTube, so I'm pretty familiar with it. I've been back and forth through it about four different times, and there's a boatload of cardboard that went into this thing, I've got to tell you.
Yes.
There's a lot of cardboard that went into it. So, about how long did it take you for set construction? Because there's several different sets. There's a couple of corridors, what looks like a Jeffries tube in there. It looks like, you know, you've definitely got a cockpit or a control center somewhere. And then there's kind of a break room or something that I saw in there as well.
Yes.
So how many different sets and what's the length of time it took you to actually construct those? And is that gray paint? Because you must have gone through about 90 gallons of it at least.
It is battleship gray paint.
Okay, it is battleship gray. All right.
Yes. Well, I started... It took me 3 years to build all those sets.
Wow.
There are eight sets.
Okay.
And the cardboard came from a variety of sources, recycling, my wife's work. She works at Hearthside Books. The actor who plays Bruce is Carl Sears, and he works up at the university, and they replaced a bunch of mattresses. And so he had a whole bunch of mattress boxes.
Oh, nice, long sheets, too, with no perforations or anything in them. That's good.
He said, do you need some cardboard? And I said, oh, yes. And he showed up, and he had all these boxes. And we unloaded it and stored it. And then through the course of building the sets and tearing them down and rebuilding new ones, I used up all that cardboard. And a lot of the cardboard is recycled. Of course, the hallway is 35 feet long. I don't know if you'll know that in the preview or not, but it's quite long, and it used the most cardboard.
Right.
So
it looked
really
like it looked almost like an octagonal corridor that you'd built. Okay. And as far as fitting the lights into the side panels on that, are those just regular fluorescents that you used?
The lights, there are several different kinds of lights. There are Christmas tree lights.
Okay. That's good use for your Christmas lights.
LED
yeah.
Christmas tree lights and the more standard incandescent. I found out the LED lights flicker, by the way. So any future filmmakers out there, you have to address that. They'll show up flickering in your... there was a lot of compact fluorescent bulbs in the movie, and there's several lights that use standard 4-foot fluorescent tubes as well.
Okay, now as far as the set construction and everything, that took a lot of time. Your talent for the movie, is that all local? Everybody's from here?
Yes, all the talent was local. And most of the people were not... None of us are real theater actors, except for there were two people. There's Megan Benke and Ed Christian, who I got from Theater in the Rough to help me out. And they have small parts, but important parts. But otherwise, the rest of us really don't have much acting experience. And we're all local.
It looked really good, though. I mean, for anybody that hasn't watched the trailer, you can see it on YouTube. Just look for Space Trucker Bruce, and it shows up. It should be the very first thing that shows up. There's actually two different trailers that show up on there. There's one that's around 2.5, and then there's one that's about 3.5.
I made a teaser trailer for the movie when I had enough done to create something. I mean, just barely. And that one features Megan in it, and she's narrating the preview. And then the full trailer, which is the latest one that I produced and the one I recommend people watch, is about 2 minutes and 46 seconds long. And I did it after the movie was complete, so it has footage from the whole thing, and all the effects are in there, and it's color corrected. So.
Right. And the as far as science fiction as a medium is not the easiest thing to do. Like, I'm a big sci-fi fan, mm-hmm. too. I love science fiction movies. So what motivated you to choose sci-fi as a medium to tell your story?
Well, I've always loved space-based science fiction movies, and there just aren't enough of them out there. And so it seemed like the obvious choice for me. I really don't know if I want to make any other kind of movie. It has to have some kind of spaceship in it.
Well, I like that, too. So that's fine. But I talked to you before we came in the studio, and I did mention that it really has a similar feel to Dan O'Bannon and John Carpenter's Dark Star, which was reaching way back. This is 1974. Those guys did their film on a shoestring budget, too. And, you know, most notably, I remember that there was a giant beach ball with feet that, you know, lead somebody on a merry chase throughout the ship at one point in the movie. But as far as, you know, creation for your movie, what motivated you to set it on a ship as opposed to setting it somewhere else, you know, with the ship is integral to the story?
Well, when you're on a ship, you're confined. The action that's happening has to take place on that ship. It puts limitations on what kind of a story you can write. It also, there's benefits to that because that limitation sparks creativity. But also, the ship is a character in the movie. The ship, the computer for the ship talks. It's called Nessie, and she plays an important part in the movie. And the sci-fi that I like the best is sci-fi that has spaceships in it.
So. Okay, is Nessie the sour cream cup?
No.
There's a sour cream cup in there somewhere.
Yes, there is. There's Mr. Sour Cream.
Okay.
And it's one of Bruce's homemade companions.
Okay, and is this more or less a tongue-in-cheek type movie? Or is this, you know, okay, so there's a lot of humor in this as well.
It's humor, but it's realistic at the same time. I mean, as realistic as I could do. It's not trying to spoof anything.
Right.
The story is humorous, and it's not supposed to be taken seriously. No. I think with a movie like this, with the budget that I had and the level of quality of everything, I think that the humor is very important to make the movie enjoyable.
Right, Anton, well, it looks amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've already been through it about 4 times, the trailer anyways. I haven't seen the whole thing. But let everybody know when and where you're having the world premiere.
Yes. It premieres this Friday, March 14th, at Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. 7 p.m. is the early show, and then there's a 9 p.m. show. I suggest showing up early for either of those shows. There's also a Saturday and Sunday matinee, Saturday at 2 o'clock and Sunday at 2 o'clock. After that, on March 18th, if all goes well, I'm going to have it up on demand, and you can go to spacetruckerbruce.com, and it will be available there.
All right, so spacetruckerbruce.com. Well, that's a mouthful at times. So they'll be able to get it starting on the 18th. You'll be able to see it online.
Yes.
And if you want to see it this week, it's Friday night at 7 p.m. and at 9 p.m. at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. And then on Saturday and Sunday, 2 matinees, both at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. And if anybody hasn't seen the trailer yet and you have the availability to get on YouTube, look at the trailer. It's Space Trucker Bruce, and you'll definitely have some fun with it. It's it looks really good. Again, you did all the effects in-house. Those are all you.
It's all me.
So that's definitely admirable. Anton, it was great having you in the studio today.
Thank you.
And I wish you all the success with the movie. It's going to be great.
Thanks.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. Florida scrub jays, beautiful, curious, and easily approached, are Florida's only truly native bird. They breed nowhere else in the world. But today, their population is just 10% of what it was 200 years ago. One remaining stronghold is an area of ancient sand dunes and scrub oak in south-central Florida, called the Lake Wales Ridge Important Bird Area. Marianne Carosi, with Audubon Florida, coordinates Jaywatch there, which monitors the birds and restores their habitat.
It's about making a difference on one property at a time. Seeing the delight in people's faces when they see their first Florida scrub jays and stand there just completely fascinated, captivated by these beautiful blue and silver birds. It's teaching people that they can make a difference.
Dr. Carosi sees the Florida scrub jay as a symbol of how land use changes have affected native birds. Lands converted to growing citrus and other agriculture have lost the oak ecosystems the jays require. What does Marianne recommend for people anywhere who like birds?
Get out and volunteer. Work to create healthy habitats for plants and animals that are native to your area. And help spread the message. Take your friends and family out with you. Get outdoors.
There's more to this story at birdnote.org.
Hi, this is Rob Cohen, inviting you to join me and a sextet of Juno's finest jazz musicians in a tribute to Blue Note Records as part of the KRNN Spotlight series. The Blue Note label celebrates its 75th anniversary this year, and we're paying tribute with a selection of classic tunes by legendary composers such as John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, Horace Silver, and Wayne Shorter. It's at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Wednesday, March 19th at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. Tickets available at krnn.org, the station, or at the door.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:22 p.m. Well, Dale Curtis is from Ketchikan, and he's playing the KRNN concert with us on the 19th. And I'm going to play a little bit of a cut off his CD, just so you guys get a taste of what you might be in store for. This is a song. It's called Lazy River. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a little bit from Dale Curtis Quintet, and that's off the CD Bridge to Nowhere. It's a song called Lazy River. Again, they're going to be in town a week from tonight with us. It's a KRNN concert, and it's going to be on the 19th. Again, that was Dale Curtis. But right now, my guest in the studio is Dale Smith, and he's the new marketing director at the Nugget Mall. And I'm grateful to have him on the show with me today. Hi, Dale. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good.
And what exactly does a marketing director do, and how did you get selected for this position?
Well, a marketing director typically handles getting the name out there and getting people to come to the mall. I got selected for the position. I have a background 10 years in the media. I had my own radio talk show in Kansas City, Missouri for 3 years. I published a magazine that ended up kind of going regionally, and did that for over a decade.
Okay, that's a pretty good background. So was the competition fierce to get selected for this position?
You know, I don't know how many people they interviewed. I have been in Juneau for a year and a half and been in the media here, not on the air, in print. I think they had a few interviews, but I'm not sure how many people actually sent in the resumes on it.
Okay, and what will you wind up doing as a marketing director?
My main focus with it is try to bring people into the malls. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, the Nugget Mall is going to be 40 years old this year. So my plans as a marketing director is to market our birthday, get people coming in, put on community events, community fairs. Like every month we do a Saturday market. It's kind of like a small crafts fair. Local vendors, handmade items come in, and it's a lot of fun for the people. They come in, they get to see something different. I'm working with Juneau, Alaska Music Matters, and I'm trying to set up for April a concert, and I believe it's for the third graders of three of the grade schools here. So we're going to do some more of that in the mall and get more community involvement for the mall.
Okay. And are you involved at all in getting additional vendors into the storefronts that are there?
That's not my job. Yes, that is the mall manager's position. But I do get asked a lot because, needless to say, I'm kind of sitting out front or usually running around the mall somewhere. So anybody who happens to call in or see me will typically ask me first, you know, how much is rent? How much is this store? Can I get this space? But yeah, sadly, I have to pass those on.
And there are two big events. One's coming up this month, and then the one I was talking to you before we went on the air that comes up on April 5th.
Yeah,
so
April 5th.
So tell us about the March one first.
March 15th, our Saturday market. Come on down, and this will be our last Saturday market of the month, and that's unless I set some last-minute events up in March, this will be the last kind of community event for March. But if I get a new one set up at the last minute, I will absolutely send you a press release on it so you guys will know. April 5th, the travel fair.
That's the one that a lot of people are looking forward to.
Everybody loves it. You know, lots of vendors, lots of, you know, what's going on this summer? Come on out. We should have a full house. We always do. And that's put on by the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau. But, yeah, it's always packed.
Okay. Do you have any idea who some of the returning vendors and presenters are for this?
I don't yet. Actually, the Visitors Bureau hasn't sent them to me yet.
Wow, really? They haven't gotten to you? It's coming up in less than a month.
I know. It's kind of making me nervous. I'm like, who's? And I want to see who's new, because I actually went last year as a consumer and walked through it. So I'm a little excited to be on this side of the table this year.
Right. So I know we're probably going to have representatives from the Mount Roberts Tramway.
They'll probably be there.
And all three of the helicopter tour companies should be there.
The tour companies are usually there. A lot of whale-watching tour companies, things along that lines will be there. You know, salmon fishing, halibut fishing. A lot of the charter boat companies come. Yeah, so, yeah, it's always good.
I was wondering if you had some insight on any of the new people that are going to be here.
I wish I did. Yes, I'm still waiting to get the list, needless to say. So, yeah, that'll be a fun one.
Okay, is there any other details to your job that you want to share with the listeners?
Well, one thing I would like to tell the community is, you know, come on out to the mall, because I'm going to try to put in place and implement some new things for the mall as far as decorations, getting with, you know, particular artists and photo groups and things along that lines, getting together with the high schools, the junior highs, the grade schools, and displaying some of the kids' art as well throughout the mall. I think that's, in the short time I've been there, the whole 1 week that I've been there, I think that's one thing that we're lacking is that interaction with the community.
Okay, I agree with you there. That should be a top priority to have a little bit more community involvement and get people out there. As far as the other end anchor stores that are relatively new, I mean, we've got Office Depot and
right.
and Petco. Is there anything that you know about them as far as how they're doing? If there's any more, is there anything else that's coming up as far as any additional stores that are coming in?
We may have, I can't announce it yet, but.
Uh-oh, something yes, else is coming.
we have some things in the works, and I've just overheard this. I can't say who yet, and I can't say when, but they are working real closely, and for the people of Juneau, they will love this. This will be right up our alley.
All right. Forgive me for trying to pry more
information
out of you.
Little teaser out there. Put the teaser out for you.
Okay, very good.
But yeah, very exciting thing on the horizon for
the mall. Dale, we all wish you good luck with your new position as the marketing director, and thank you very much for being our guest in the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 12th of March, 2014. It's the birthday of Jack Kerouac, born Lowell, Massachusetts, 1922. Grew up in a working-class French-Canadian family, grew up speaking French, was not fluent in English until he was a teenager. He was a star football player, got a scholarship to Columbia University, and there he met Allen Ginsberg and William S. Burroughs and Neil Cassady. He became close friends with Cassady and wrote his novel, On the Road, about trips he had taken with Neil Cassady. He started collecting material for the novel as far back as 1948. He described it in his journal as two guys hitchhiking to California in search of something they don't really find and losing themselves on the road and coming all the way back hopeful of something else. He collected notes for years and then sat down to write it in April 1951, typing it on draft paper, translucent paper, which he taped together. Started writing it on April 2nd, finished it on the 22nd, and he wrote a note to Neil Cassady's story deals with you and me and the road. Went fast because the road is fast. Wrote whole thing on strip of paper, 120-foot long tracing paper, just rolled it through typewriter, and in fact no paragraphs, rolled it out on floor, and it looks like a road. The book was rejected again and again, but in 1957 was published by Viking Press. It got mixed reviews, but it sold very well, and its success enabled Kerouac to come out with other novels in the years immediately following, The Dorma Bums, Dr. Sachs, Visions of Cody, and Big Sur. It's the birthday of the playwright Edward Albee, born 1928, author of The Zoo Story, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Me, Myself, and I. It's the birthday of the poet Naomi Shihab Nye, born St. Louis, 1952, her father Palestinian, her mother American. Her latest book, a collection of very short stories, There Is No Long Distance Now. Naomi Shihab Nye, who said, "Poetry calls us to pause. There is so much we overlook while the abundance around us continues to shimmer on its own." And it was on this date in 2009 that the financier Bernard Madoff pleaded guilty to 11 felony counts in the largest financial embezzlement and fraud case in the history of Wall Street. He admitted to conning thousands of investors out of nearly $50 billion. And at the age of 71, he was sentenced to 150 years in prison. Here's a poem for today by Kay Ryan. The title is a quote from Ripley's Believe It or Not. A plain, ordinary steel needle can float on pure water. Who hasn't seen a plain, ordinary steel needle float serene on water as if lying on a pillow? The water cuddles up like jello. It's a treat to see water so rubbery, a needle so peaceful, the point encased in the tenderest dimple. It seems so simple when things or people have modified each other's qualities somewhat. We almost forget the oddity of that. Paul McKay Ryan, A Plain Ordinary Steel Needle Can Float on Pure Water, from The Best of It, New and Selected Poems, published by Grove Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. It's 3:36 p.m. I'm your host, Ken Fix, and my guest now is Gina White from The March of Dimes. Hi, Gina. Welcome to the studio.
Hi.
Nice to have you here, and tell us why you're here with The March of Dimes.
Well, thank you. I am here to talk about the March for Babies Walk that is coming up on May 10th at the Diamond Fieldhouse at 9 a.m. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about the walk, encourage the community to get involved, and maybe tell you a little bit about the mission of March of Dimes.
Okay, well, please do.
Okay, the current mission of the March of Dimes is to help moms have full-term pregnancies and to research the problems that threaten the health of babies. So in local communities around the country, March of Dimes helps mom take charge of her own health, and they support the families when something goes wrong. March of Dimes acts globally, and they share the best practices in prenatal health and helping improve the birth outcomes where the needs are most urgent.
Okay, and I know that March of Dimes started out in 1938 under FDR's administration. I don't want to steal your thunder, so go ahead and tell little bit more about the history of March of Dimes.
You're absolutely correct, and I have a fun little story about that. Right about the time of FDR's birthday, they had a fundraiser on the radio, and the comedian actor Eddie Cantor was on the radio with them, and he coined the phrase March of Dimes. He announced on the radio that he wanted the world to send dimes to the White House and to help support, at that point, it was called infantile paralysis. And so a week before his birthday, they received $2,680,000 dimes. So $268,000 in dimes arrived in 1938. Pretty crazy.
That's pretty big bucks in 38, because that was when a dime was a dime.
Right. It was silver, too.
Right.
So then, with the help of the Rotary, FDR and the March of Dimes Foundation eradicated polio. And so then they were, once they eradicated polio, kind of crazy, they were looking for a new mission. And that is when the March of Dimes Foundation pooled their efforts to research and educate and support their mission for healthy babies. Now, then a really neat thing happened. After FDR died, the March of Dimes Foundation commissioned the Treasury to ask them, can't we put FDR on a coin? Well, just so happens the dime was coming up for redesign, and they put FDR's picture on the dime.
Yeah, it replaced the Liberty Dimer. A lot of people know it as the Mercury Dime because it kind of looked like the god Mercury, but okay.
Right, and it was just to support him for what all he did for the March of Dimes Foundation. So in Alaska, approximately 11,500 babies are born each year. So about 1,100 of those babies are born premature. And about 350 babies are born with birth defects. And March of Dimes is there to help, number one, help the pregnancies to prevent premature birth, and then to help with the problems afterwards. One specific example is here at the hospital, March of Dimes has put together a backpack with all the needed toiletries and supplies a mom will need if she gets medevaced, which is a really neat thing. I have a little bit of personal experience. I have two premature babies myself. My first son was born 4 weeks premature, and my second son was, I actually was medevaced 8 weeks early, and I ended up staying 6 weeks in the hospital. And his birth, you know, might have been around, I don't know, $300,000, and that was about 8 years ago. So here's what I'm broaching to employers out there. I would like your support to form a team with your employees to help support March of Dimes and help reduce the costs of the medical expenses to...
Right. There's been a big whoop-de-doo in the news about two women with... You can tell them the story. I know the company that wound up trying to deny their employees their costs for premature births, and it was a big to do. They got called out by it. I'm not going to say what the company's name is on the air here, but they got called out in the media, and they had to do some serious backpedaling because they were trying to basically deny benefits to one specific class of employee, namely women who had children who were premature, you know, with premature births.
Right, and it's not your fault, and we try as hard as we can to have healthy pregnancies and healthy babies, but sometimes things happen. You know, a lot of times pregnancy itself is a mystery to even doctors. March of Dimes is doing the best they can to advocate and research and educate and support working together for strong and healthy babies. So I would just like to invite everybody to come. First off, let me just give you my phone number. I need help organizing this event, and I need help walking and raising money. And if anybody wants to send their dimes, I don't know. They probably could send dimes here to the radio station. I don't know. Something like that.
All right, Gina, we'll give them your information. So,
okay,
yeah, I don't want a flood of dimes in the studio here. That may not be good.
My, again, it was Gina White, and my number is 586-1650. You can reach my website online at www.marchforbabies.org/Gina White, Alaska. So again, my number is 586-1650, and the event is on May 10th at the Diamond Field House.
Okay, give everybody a little bit more information about the May 10th event.
So what we do is we have rented the Diamond Field House, and we're doing a walk, March for Babies, and we will walk upstairs on the track for a mile if it's rainy. And if it's not rainy, we're hoping for sunshine, we'll be walking outdoors on the Brotherhood Trail. So we'll have two walks going simultaneously. And we'll also have a bouncy house and lots of kid events inside. And what we'd ask for you to do is to raise money for March of Dimes and come to the event, turn in your money, participate with us in walking. And then afterwards, your kids can have a little fun running around and...
Right, so people are going to walk, and you're going to ask them for sponsors.
Right,
so that's
right,
basically
exactly.
What you're doing.
Right,
okay.
Exactly. Last year, with the support of Juno, I was able to raise $5,000. And I would love to see Juno itself raise, let's see, I believe Juno as a whole raised close to $15,000 last year. And I'd love to have that raised up a number to about $20,000 from Juno. I know Ketchikan beats us every year, and we just can't have that.
Well, not when we... beat them out in population by at least three times. So
exactly.
Yeah, so again, people can volunteer to walk themselves, and get pledges, and that's,
you can start a team,
or just be a
person.
You can
have a company team, a family team, a bunch of mom groups. You can bring your stroller. We would love you to support us any way you can. If you can help volunteer to sponsor the event, we're looking for a chairperson here in Juneau. If you'd like to sponsor me and my family, you can find me on the website. Again, you can call me at 586-1650, and I can give you more information about how to get involved.
Okay, Gina, and give everybody the website address again, too.
Okay, the website is marchforbabies.org/GinaWhiteAlaska, or if you just want to start your own team, you just do the marchforbabies.org. And there will be flyers and information around town at the AMP and various other locations.
All right, Gina, thank you very much for being our guest in the studio today. It was great having you.
Thank you.
My baby was just learning to crawl. So many people smoked indoors. The baby would just lay there under a thick curtain of smoke, unable to move. Luckily, we now know the dangers of secondhand smoke, asthma, heart disease, and others.
Alaska has made great strides in tobacco prevention and thousands of lives have been saved, but there is still more work to do. Don't allow anyone to smoke near your child.
Brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast.
Support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering a team of physicians and nurse practitioners committed to healthy newborns, toddlers, teens, and adults in Southeast Alaska, and proud to support public radio.
The Juneau World Affairs Council presents Mary Miller this Thursday, March 13th at 5 p.m. in the At 360 space located in the KTOO building. Mary will be talking about her experiences as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Ukraine, where she was stationed until just last week when they pulled her out. That's this Thursday, March 13th, 5 p.m. at the new At 360 space in the KTOO building. This message is brought to you by JWAC, bringing the world to Juneau.
Welcome back to a Juneau afternoon. It's 3:46 p.m., and my guest now is Aaron Elmore. He's from Theater in the Rough, and he's going to talk about their new production.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Aaron. Nice having you.
Thank you very much. Our new production is called The Rivals. We opened last weekend along with everything else in town, and we're very, very, very pleased with the way things have gone off so far. Just wanted to have a chance to tell everybody a little bit about the production and also let them know that the chances to see it are coming up this week. First of all, on Thursday evening, we'll have a pay-as-you-will. Well, we're opening the box on that just a little bit. In light of the season, the weather, and other needs, we'd also like to change the name of the show from a pay-as-you-will to a pay-as-you-can. So if you want to bring a can of food to the production, that'll get you through the door and in to see 2.5 hours of nonstop laughs, music, song, dance, everything you can imagine, of fancy clothes and all the wit that Mr. Richard Brinsley Sheridan was able to cook up 200 years ago for our play, The Rivals. A can of non-perishable food, bag of pasta, jar of peanut butter, something like that. That'll all go to the Head Start families right there, served by the Holy Trinity Parish. So, but Theater in the Rough show did open last weekend. We had two previews and learned something in the previews which I've never learned before. I direct the show along with my wife, Katie, co-founder. And what we learned was during the previews, if you saw it during the preview, do come back. We found out we had two openings. We had two beginnings to the show. The show began twice, which is one too many beginnings, is what we discovered. So we pared away the one we didn't need, and we did the really good one. And we're doing that one at the beginning now as opposed to in one scene. So it's a really marvelous the way the thing is developed, and we're still learning how to do this this work.
Okay, what is The Rivals about?
The Rivals is about a young woman who is being wooed. There are four different guys that are people are trying to set her up with. One of them's too old. One of them's too country. One of them is too rich.
Oh, wait a minute. How can that be?
Yeah, it's weird, right? Well, we find out that Lydia wants to... she is extremely well off herself, some 30,000 pounds in her possession and living off the interest very comfortably, but she wants to be loved for herself, not for her money. So she's in love with this very poor guy, who she's very handsome and very hunky. What we find out, though, in the course of very shortly, is that the young, handsome, hunky guy is actually the same as the one guy who's too rich. He's just pretending, wearing a different jacket. And so we find out in the course of this that she has to come to grips with the fact that she actually finds out that the guy she's in love with is the guy that everybody wants her to marry, and she's not too happy about being fooled about that, and matters sort of fall apart from there and get built back up, as they happen in a comedy.
Okay, who are your actors in the play?
Well, myself and Katie Jensen have taken parts in this. Katie, quite famously so far, has entered into a role of Mrs. Malaprop. Now, Mrs. Malaprop is a fairly well-known character, even if you don't know The Rivals. You may have heard the term malapropism. Mrs. Malaprop is famous for spending words that she really can't afford. She likes big fancy language, but she doesn't really have a handle on what all these different words mean, so she uses them sort of inappropriate to very hilarious effect. One of my favorites is she describes her niece, Lydia Languish, who's the young woman in question, whom everybody is supposed to marry, as being as headstrong as an allegory on the banks of the Nile. So it gives you an idea about where this is all probably going.
Allegories.
Yes. It sort of goes on from there. I'll be playing a dad of the young hunky guy, which is a tremendous part for me at this particular point. Sir Anthony Absolute is his name. And our young hunky guy is played by Jeremy Kotler. Jeremy's jobbed in by Perseverance to build sets and so forth, but he came and auditioned for us as an actor, and he's tremendous, so we've had him on. Lydia Languish, played by Sophie Lager. Sophie was in a show of ours many years back and hasn't been for a while, so it's tremendous to have her back on. Phil Schempf, we have another new fish, Andrew Madsen. Hadassah Nelson is back on stage again. Zeb Bodine, back on stage. And I'm dreadfully afraid I'm forgetting somebody. Natalia Spengler is playing piano during the thing. She's a very accomplished pianist, a young woman who's lending a lot of different talents to this. She's also playing three different roles in the play and doing a little singing. So it's a tremendous bunch of talent we've managed to pull together for this thing.
It sounds fabulous. And again, remind everybody exactly where and when this is taking place.
Where is McPheeters Hall at 4th and Gold downtown? That's the parish hall for Holy Trinity Church. The time for the shows in the evening is 7:30, and we'll have one this Thursday night, which is a pay-as-you-can. You can just bring a can of food or throw a couple of dollars in the plate if you like. But really, we're just trying to get people back out on the second weekend. Friday and Saturday night, there will be evening shows as well, also at 7:30. Then we have two more weekends when we will run Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings. And then we'll also have Sunday matinees on those final two weekends. So we close, I believe it's the 30th, on a matinee at 2 o'clock with those two matinees. Now, tickets are available at every bookstore you can find. They're also available online on our website, the JAC's website, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Wonderful, wonderful work they do. Thank you very much to them. And they're also available at the door.
Okay, Aaron Elmore, thank you very much for updating us on The Rivals, and that sounds excellent for those of you out there looking to see something funny. It's highly recommended.
Thank you.
Thanks for being our guest in the studio today.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a little bit of Chick Corea and Bella Fleck from the CD The Enchantment. They are actually going to be here Monday, April 28th at the JDHS Auditorium at 7:30. And that little cut was called Mountain. So that's just a little bit of a preview of what you might hear from them. And again, that's not for a little ways off. That's coming up on Monday, April 28th, so a little over a month out, and just a taste of what you might hear from them. Now, my guest here in the studio is no stranger to the Juno Afternoon. It's Jeffra Clow from Eagle Crest. Hi, Jeffra. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ken. Good. How are you today?
Great. It's nice having you back again. And what's going on the Hill?
Well, we starting tomorrow, Thursday, and I guess that would be the 13th of March, we are open daily through Monday, March 24th for the spring break holidays. So the snow bus will start running on Saturday, the 15th, and it'll run straight through the the holidays. Will run till Sunday, the March 23rd, and you can find that bus schedule on skijuno.com. And we have our spring break camps that start on Monday and run Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we still have a little bit of space in those, so if you're interested in those, you can call our snow sports school at 790-2000 extension 211. So it's hard to believe spring is here.
Well, just about.
Just about. Hey, the sun is shining today.
Of course it. Well, kind of in and out here. We've been kind of blue skies, half rain showers, but better than usual. All right, and you were going to talk about the terrain park, too.
Yep, and starting, we've got our Great Alaskan Terrain Park series, and the first event of this series is Saturday, March 15th, and this is a Jib Jam. And you can find information on this on skijuno.com. But what it basically what is it is it's three rails and boxes on the Muskeg Run, which is just behind the Day Lodge. Registration is Saturday from 9 to 11, then practices from 10 to noon, and then the jam is from 1 to 2. And then finals are 2 to 2:30. So this is the first event of our Great Alaskan Terrain Park series, and it's for ages 7 and up. So come on out and show your stuff on three rails and a box and have a great time with Alaska Terrain Parks, the Great Alaskan Terrain Park series.
Okay, and how's the pre-construction phase coming up for the Porcupine Lodge?
Yep, we had a pre-construction meeting last week, and the construction of that building will start on Tuesday, April 15th. So on Monday, April 14th, we close on the 13th, on Sunday the 13th. Monday the 14th, we're going to move snow off the construction area, and then Tuesday, construction actually starts. And so we're very excited. People that are visiting Eagle Crest up there this summer will see the construction going on. So they may notice some changes in parking. They may notice where the picnic tables are. And so it'll be a lot different all summer long. But they're scheduled to finish that building up December 1st, so we'll have it for next season. So we're very excited by this.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Jeffra, for the update on what's going on with Eagle Crest.
All right, thanks, Ken.
Nice having you as always.
Thank you.
And now we've got a couple of public service announcements here. The bidding review board meeting that was to review the changes to the board's hearing procedures that was scheduled for the 11th was canceled, and it's going to be rescheduled. So that information is going to be posted on the City Borough of Juneau meeting calendar online at www.juneau.org/calendar/index.php. And also, tobacco use is the leading cause of preventable death in the U.S. 4,000 kids try their first cigarette each day, and 700 of those become new daily smokers. So they would like you to join NCADD and Teens Against Tobacco Use on March 19th. That's a week from today. It's called Kick Butts Day. I didn't come up with that. Somebody else did. It's a day of activism to stand up against and speak out against tobacco. Juneau is jump-starting Kick Butts Day the week of March 17th to March 21st at the Gold Medal Basketball tournament held at the JDHS gymnasium. Stop by the tables to learn about the dangers of tobacco, interact with fun visual displays, and be entered into a raffle. They can't wait to see you there. And that's broadcast brought to you by NCADD and Teens Against Tobacco Use. Tonight's forecast is still calling for numerous rain showers in the evening, rain late, snow levels 1,400 feet. That should make people at Eagle Crest happy, but decreasing to 600 feet late. So there may be a little bit of new fresh powder up there. Lows in the upper 30s with southeast winds at 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow's forecast is for rain with snow level about 500 feet in the morning and highs in the upper 30s to low 40s. Rain's supposed to be continuing through Friday as well. And KTOO broadcasts in Juneau on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet in Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI cable on digital channel 871. And we're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Tomorrow on the show, Shauna Strausser will be your host, and she's going to have the Juneau Symphony Weekend Showcase, Eric Goldsberry, Don Reardon about his presentations for the 49 Writers Group, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. All that, plus some music, Bird Note, your familiar programs, and more on a Juneau afternoon for Thursday. Been nice hosting for you today. Have a great day, and we'll see you later.
President Obama's plan to expand overtime pay.
Today is Wednesday, March 12th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The president plans to use executive authority to order a broad expansion of overtime for millions of workers.
That story also tens of thousands of empty buildings owned by the federal government.
They could be costing taxpayers more than $1 billion a year in upkeep.
It's really a shame not to have it put to a use that would be of benefit to taxpayers and citizens as a whole.
And new TV shows spring off Silicon Valley.
Socially awkward people with money is a very funny area. We live in an era where, you know, the Zuckerbergs of the world are king.
Those stories in this hour after the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. President Obama met with the Prime Minister of Ukraine today at the White House, telling Arseniy Yatsenyuk that his country has the support of the U.S. and the international community. NPR's Moore Lyason has more.
President Obama said it's in the interest of the U.S. that the people of Ukraine...